Welcome to Beyond Words with Dr. William Campbell, awakening the world to the power of God's Word. And now, here is your host, Dr. William Campbell.
Welcome to Beyond Words Radio, where it's our ambition to move beyond simply talking about Christian doctrine to walking with Christ, to living the life that God wants us to live. And many of us will say, well, that's kind of hard today, you know. Things have changed. They're not like they used to be. Well, today we're going to think about what they used to be like. On this Memorial Day, we're going to reflect back on the historic roots of this nation as we give thanks to God for the sacrifice of so many who've helped secure and maintain our liberties. These things are very important. We have with us guest David Barton. He's the founder and president of Wall Builders. David has written many books, and he speaks and travels around the world. He's speaking to about 400 groups a year. We're lucky to get him on. He's a busy man, but he's talking about this very important topic, our Christian heritage as a nation. David, thank you for being with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So, David, we had you on, I think, maybe a year ago, and just since then, it feels like the landscape continues to change around us, not just politically, but there's something deeper going on. It's spiritual. It's moral. It has to do with the very character of our nation. Do you agree with me?
Yeah, I totally agree, and I would actually add a couple of prefixes to that. I think it's anti-spiritual and anti-moral.
Mm.
The changes we've had have been direct frontal assaults on spiritual values and moral values in ways that we could never have imagined. A year ago, we said, well, you know, some things are changing, but, you know, America's America. Well, not this time. I mean, we have seen George Orwell did a couple of books. He's a great literary figure, and he did Animal Farm, and he did 1984. Mm-hmm. And in Animal Farm, they had a figure in there he called Squealer. Squealer was the pig, mm-hmm. and Squealer was able to redefine words and make black look like white, white look like black. And so, you know, I look at North Carolina, and they say, hey, you know, let's just kind of limit bathrooms to biological sex. Let's do that men, women for women. And somehow that's called discrimination. Now, we've only done that since the time of Adam and Eve. And now it's discrimination. Yeah, it's discrimination against Christians. And in the last year, anytime you hear the word discrimination, people need to understand what it means is discrimination against Christians. What Governor Bryant did in Mississippi when he signed the bill there, the Pastor Protection Act, that says pastors cannot be forced to perform a homosexual wedding against their conscience, and that's called a discrimination bill. Yeah, it's discrimination against pastors if they're forced to do things against their conscience. But what we're doing now is taking a bill that literally is designed to stop discrimination, and we're calling it a discrimination bill. And so Governor Nathan Deal in Georgia, no way he's going to sign that, man. He'll get his brains beat at him. And for saying that there are actually genders, that there are actually biological sexes, you got McCrory, Governor McCrory of North Carolina, who's just taken a pounding from businesses and concerts and PayPal and others because they're not going to be part of discrimination. And well, how come that wasn't discrimination 3 years ago? How come for 400 years in American history it's never been discrimination? And we're at that place with Squealer, where that black is white and white is black. Hmm. And it's not that people agree with the rhetoric. It's just that they're staying silent right now. They don't want to get attacked. And so, you know, we got 72% of the nation that thinks bathrooms should be biological, not for ideological. And right now, the last I knew, there's 87 different perceived sexual identities. And they change from day to day depending on what you feel like when you get up. We actually have a Christian college now in Connecticut that has taken, and they now give dorm housing to 15 different gender identities. Now, male and female aren't part of them, but you can choose 15 different housing situations based on your gender identity, what you feel like at the time, but not male and female. That's a Christian college. So it's things are changing in the last year in ways that I don't think any of us would have imagined a year ago.
You know, Animal Farm, it's through analogy, through a story, it has a very powerful point. But you can kind of laugh and think of just an animal farm, and it seems to be what we're living in, because where is the logic behind so much of this? And I understand there's this one agenda of trying to be fair, you know, to certain minorities. But as you said, when it comes to ideologies around sexuality, we could identify dozens and dozens of such minorities. We're just going to go crazy But there is an agenda afoot, and it's about a lot more than sexuality. It's, I think the core of it, and I'm going to turn this into a question for you because I'm supposed to be interviewing you, but I think the core of it is human, not just sexuality, selfishness. You know, I'm the center of the world. I should get whatever I want. Have you seen, David, in your studies that when a nation gets to this point, that my pleasures matter more than the good of society, that a society will crumble?
Yeah, it is. That has been the historic pattern. It was that way throughout the Bible. I was just in Bible reading this morning, noticing that in Judges. Now, first, it's repeated twice in Judges. It says, in those days, Israel had no king, so everyone did what was right in his own eyes. And when you have no ultimate authority, when you have no recognition of authority, and for us, it used to be God. God was our king. He was our authority. That was the motto we had in the Revolution. You know, no king but King Jesus is what they used in Vermont in 1775 and 1776, 1777. The North Carolina currency at the time of the Revolution said, God is our king. Mm-hmm. So that used to be the thing. And where there is no king, every man does that which is right in his own eyes. And that's really where we are now. Last year, George Barna and I did a book. And George Barna, a national pollster, unlike other pollsters, he really focuses on what the church believes. Mm-hmm. And when you start looking inside the church, what we're seeing inside the church is everyone does that which is right in their own eyes. And as part of that, 67% of church people, 67% of Christians believe that there is no absolute moral right or wrong. Now, for two-thirds of Christians to say there's no absolutes when it comes to morals, I mean, that means you know nothing about the Scriptures, but you no longer believe the Scriptures. You may bear the name of Christian, but you're not believing what a Christian is designed to believe out of the Scriptures. 68% of Christians actually said that sex outside of marriage is moral behavior, morally acceptable behavior to have sex outside of marriage. But wait a minute, sex is limited to a male and a female inside marriage in a lifelong relationship. So it doesn't matter if it's homosexuality or heterosexuality or premarital sex or extramarital sex or anything, but we've lost that. So we are at a point now, and we've been doing this for 20 years in schools. It was called post-structuralism. There was values clarification. There was everything else that went for decades. And we've been teaching Americans that the values are what fit for you. And that's why we've gone to gender, perceived gender identity. You just decide what gender you want to be. And there's 87 of them now. So you can choose your sexual identity, and it's based on perception, not reality. So the one thing I've seen that we have lost the most of in the last year has been common sense. Things that we say, you got to be kidding me. And most people say that, but they're not the people that have the microphones or the newspapers or the media. They're not the people running businesses. They're just the average Americans. And we're looking at what's going on and saying, it's not even logical. But again, back to the Christian side of it, in a huge study done last year on Bible, only 9% of Christians read the Bible on a daily basis, and only 2 to 3% of them have ever read through the Bible from cover to cover. So we're talking about 97% of Christians have never read the book on which their faith is based, which makes it very easy for us to see what we see now. 76% of Protestants do not want to see Roe v. Wade overturned. They want to keep it. 27% of active homosexuals are born-again Christians by profession, and yet the Bible says in 1 Corinthians 9 that homosexuals will not enter the kingdom of heaven. So how can you be born again and do something that keeps you, you know? And none of it makes sense. It's not even common sense. But we have reached a point in America of biblical literacy like we have never had in our history, and also historical literacy like we've never had in our history. And those two things, every time they occurred in Israel, it was a bad deal in the Bible.
Yeah. I mean, it's been said that the Bible and our Constitution are the two most important, highly valued documents in America, and also the least read and understood to a large extent.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just amazing how we say something's important, but we don't really believe it.
Well, you know, that's a great point, because even something like the Constitution. Now, all right, granted, the Bible will take you a few weeks to read, go cover to cover. Constitution takes you about 20 minutes to read to go cover to cover. And so what's fairly interesting in the Constitution is it's a fairly easy document to read. But in the last election 2 years ago, 70% of voters did not know the Constitution was the supreme law of the land, and 62% of voters could not name the three branches of government. Hmm. So what we have is after, you know, the law I mentioned earlier that the Governor McCrory signed in North Carolina and the Governor Bryant signed in Mississippi, well, Governor Andrew Cuomo of New York says, all right, that's it. I am banning state travel into Mississippi or New York. We're not going to, state travel's over for those. Now, wait a minute. Article 1, Section 4 of the Constitution says that you cannot ban travel between states. You have, it's called the Privileges and Immunities Clause. You have to be free to move among any of the 50 states in the United States. That's constitutional. But you've got a governor who's sworn to uphold that, who's directly, I'll guarantee you, he doesn't know that's a clause in the Constitution. We just saw Supreme Court Justice Breyer come out with a new book that's saying, you know, we're going to have to catch up with the rest of the world. We got to get rid of our Constitution. This is a really bad deal. Mm. Governor Ginsburg is going across to other countries saying, when you build your new Constitution, do not model it after the U.S. Constitution. That's a really bad document. And so we got those that are in the highest office now working hard against the Constitution. We've got those that are governor spots who don't have a clue what's in it. And we've got citizens who vote that don't have a even the, and by the way, 62% of citizens could not name the three branches of government. 48% of elected officials could not name the three branches of government. It's really hard to have separation of powers and keep the judges under control if you don't even know how many branches there are and what they do. So, you know, again, the literacy side, and you said both the Bible and the Constitution, you're exactly right. Those are the two documents that have made America special, and they're the two documents that most people know the least about today.
If I heard you right, you said 48% of elected officials cannot name the three branches of our government. Is that what you
said? That's exactly right.
Unbelievable.
48% of elected officials. Well, take this. There's a great group called ISI, which is Intercollegiate Studies Institute. And let me back up and put some background on this. If you live in virtual North Pole, not North Pole, Alaska, let's say you live in North Pole, somehow Santa Claus lives up there, and you live there, and you decide to migrate south, and you end up in the United States. You look around and say, this is pretty cool. This, I think I'll live. Didn't even know this was down here. And so you want to live here, and you've never even heard about this nation before. To live here, you have to go through a couple weeks of classes and pass an immigration test. It's 100 questions on the test. And if you can pass the 100 questions about American government and American history, you can live here if you do the rest of the paperwork. But you can't live here without passing that test. So that test is 100 questions long. Right now, 92% of immigrants pass the immigration test. Given what's happened in schools, a number of states started giving the immigration test to their graduating seniors. Only 33% of graduating seniors could pass the immigration test. So what they did, ISI, they do a survey every year to see how much Americans know about their own country. And they went to Americans who have lived their whole life in America, raised here in our schools, and they took the 13 easiest questions off the immigration test, and they asked Americans the 13 easiest questions. 71% of Americans that lived here their whole life can't answer the 13 easiest questions of the immigration test. But then they did something they had not done previously, and that is, let's give this to elected officials and see what they do. So while 71% of Americans couldn't answer the 13 easiest questions, 78% of elected officials could not answer the 13 easiest questions on the immigration test. So we know nothing about our country whatsoever. And that's elected officials, which goes with that 48% of elected officials can't name the three branches of government. They can't. We do internships at Wall Builders, and so we take kids that are college age and bring them in, and we let them see original documents and handle things. But what we do also is we have an 1828 Catechism on the Constitution, 100 questions that was given to every elementary kid for years in America. And these kids in college don't have a clue how to answer the questions. And I would say most congressmen don't know the questions of this. And then we give the kids an ex-exam. Until 1920, nobody went past eighth grade. In 1920, when Progressive got education, they changed all sorts of stuff. We went into graded education, compulsory education. We went from 8 to 12 years, et cetera. But we give them the ex-exam from the 1920s out of California or Colorado, Nebraska, Oklahoma. And these are kids in college. And the stuff that they have there in the eighth grade is like postdoctoral stuff today. I mean, it is so amazing to see what every eighth grader knew in the 1920s that we don't today. So we do that for interns just to show them how far we've slipped, and that they can be the ones to bring it back, that they can get in their colleges and they can turn the stuff around. They can get into office themselves. They can turn it around. But you can't go back to where you were if you don't know where you were to start with. And that's kind of what we're talking about now is, you know, and who we were as a people, both constitutionally and historically. We can't go back to that if we don't know what that was.
Absolutely. Ignorance will be our downfall.
Yeah.
And so you've mentioned Orwell's Animal Farm and that story, of course, a few pigs, if I remember right, ran the whole camp. And here we have a country where it's to be a government that's by the people, for the people, of the people, not run by a few. Yet somehow we've got a small minority pushing an agenda that the majority wouldn't agree with if they just thought about it. Like we mentioned a bathroom ordinance. Well, a fraction of the transgender, a small fraction of 1%, and they're getting rights that go against the majority's opinion and majority rights. So what has gone wrong? Is it this lack of understanding and education? How can a few have an agenda that's so influencing everybody?
Well, there's a couple of things happening. One is we don't know much about ourselves. We don't know much about the Bible or the Constitution. But the second is the way that the nation works right now is we very much are in the mode of national news. So we got cable. We turn it on. We occasionally watch our local news, but we more watch CNN or MSNBC or Fox or Newsmax or Blaze or something. And so as a consequence, we get 24/7, 365 of what's going on at the national level. And we look there, and I'm very connected at the national level. There's more than 100 congressmen, very good friends of mine. I have a network of nearly 800 state legislators across the country. I just got a good network, and I've been involved in White House races and et cetera. And yet, I can't call President Obama and say, "Would you please like Israel?" I mean, you've been hating Israel for seven. Please like Israel. I cannot call Mitch McConnell and say, the House has passed 282 measures that you need to vote on. I mean, there's been good stuff come through the House, but you won't even let it get voted. I can't call any justice on the Supreme Court and say, "Guys, that marriage is a man and a woman. Don't change it." And so what happens is, even me with my connections, I know that there's nothing I can do to change that. And so as we watch national news, we become paralyzed because the average citizen can't do anything. Well, but that's the fun part about the American Revolution. You look back to the American Revolution, and the first four battles of the Revolution, you had the Battle of Lexington, followed by the Battle of Northbridge at Concord. You had the Battle of the Road to Boston, and then you had the Battle of Bunker Hill. And in those battles, not a single group contacted the Commander-in-Chief, George Washington, at the national level and say, "Hey, boss, what do we do here?" What they did was they said, "Well, no. These are our communities. We'll take care of our communities." And so Reverend Jonas Clark gets 70 guys out of his church at Lexington, and they go out and face the 800 British that come to town. It was a local church taking care of business. As you got to the North Bridge at Concord, when the British passed Lexington, they went to Concord. When they got there, Reverend William Emerson was there with 400 guys waiting on them. And they say, these aren't good odds. Let's go back to Boston. They got a 19-mile march back to Boston, and all along the way, you had Americans waiting for them, and it was Reverend Payson Phillips and Reverend Jonathan French and all these pastors who had their congregations out there saying, "Hey, we're defending this road. You're not taking this from us." And then when you get the Battle of Bunker Hill, you had the Reverend Francis Willard, who went over and formed companies out of his church and said, "All right, let's get over, guys. They're trying to take stuff." And it was all local stuff. And so the way we won the American Revolution, Washington was indispensable. He was key. But it was people took care of the local areas. It's like rebuilding the wall in Nehemiah. Yeah. Nobody rebuilt the whole wall. Everybody rebuilt their part of the wall. And so we have focused on that in a very real sense. If you remember what happened in Houston with the mayor there, Anise Parker, went in and said, "All right, guys, we got a non-discrimination ordinance, which means you pastors can't criticize homosexuality." She subpoenaed 16 different forms of communication from those pastors and said, "Fork it over. I want to see what you've been preaching about," Well, we were able to get pastors rallied and got that initiative on the ballot. And so leading up to the election night, there had been all the polls done showed that we were going to lose that vote by a margin of 60 to 40, that we would have the 40, they would have the 60. And yet we won that vote by a margin of 60 to 40. And what happened? Well, in the meantime, we went in and organized 4,500 churches and Houston has said, "Guys, this is about you. You need to step up here and protect your city. You need to be like Jonas Clark or Rip William Emerson or Francis Willard. You need to protect your city." And so the average voter turnout runs about 2.9% for a city election. We had over 15% turnout. And it was because 4,500 churches decided to turn up. We did the same thing in San Antonio. Average election for a city is 2.9%, which means 1.5% wins the election. We had over 15% turnout in San Antonio. And see, those are local things. So we're helping folks across the nation now take back the local communities, and it is so much easier than people think. We had a lady who just, in Bentonville, Arkansas, and Bentonville is the home of Walmart, so they got 40,000 people in that town, and they were going to do this transgender bathroom thing at the schools. Hey, we just need one locker room, one bathroom. People said no, and so this lady said, I'm running for school board, and well, she ran, and she got elected. And the total number of votes cast for her in a town of 40,000 people, she won the election having received a total of 35 votes. Riceville, Iowa, there was a guy there, same thing, ran for school board. He got busy the day of the election. He didn't vote for himself. He lost the election because nobody voted in the school board election. Nobody. Wow. Had he voted for himself, he would be on the school board. So as you move into local elections, they're so easy to win, but we watch so much national news, we feel paralyzed, and therefore we don't do anything down at the local level, the city level, the state level. And so as we look at the condition of the nation, it really comes back to us, because there's still a whole majority of us that have certain values and beliefs, but we've just been paralyzed, and that's where we're going to have to get back in and take this thing. It's just like the American Revolution. City by city, school board, by city council, mayor by mayor, and that's where we'll win. That's the way we've always won in history, and that's where we'll win again.
I want you to say a word to pastors, and you mentioned the American Revolution. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many pastors are aware, and people in general, that revolution had pastors on the front line. They bore arms, but it was through their preaching. They motivated the masses to get busy and create a revolution that allowed and gave us the freedoms, the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence. It all goes back to, in a large measure, to pastors. Is that right? And do we have a right, David, today to preach our convictions, biblical conviction, even if it seems political at times?
First answer is yes, that is right. It was the pastors. The British actually named them the Black Robe Regiment, because the pastors back then wore black robes, and they said if it were not for the pastors, America would still be a happy British colony. They blamed the pastors for doing that, because when you look at the Declaration of Independence, people look at that as a political document, and yet historians have documented that of every single right, and remember, there's 155 words that start the Declaration, set forth six principles of government. Then you have 27 grievances, and then you have the conclusion that they commit themselves, their life, fortune, sacred honor. So historians have looked at that and demonstrated that every single right set forth in the Declaration of Independence had been preached from the American pulpit by 1763, which means more than a decade before the Revolution, we had already covered every single one of those topics back and forth in the pulpit. And so if you want to have an epiphany, try reading the Declaration of Independence as a listing of sermon topics, because that's what it was. It's just, it's reiterating what we heard out of the pulpit. Now, on our website, wallbuilders.com, we have posted 280 old sermons. Mm. We own more than 100,000 documents out of American history before 1812 and thousands thereafter. And so we went through the Great Awakening, the spiritual revival, because people today say America needs a revival. And we had the first Great Awakening, which lasted 40 years, 1730 to 1770. We had the second Great Awakening, 77 years, from 1801 to 1878. You want to see what a revival looks like? Look at the sermons. And so we posted 280 sermons from famous preachers out of that era. And I guarantee you there are topics we would not even think about covering today because they're way too political. Hmm. Well, the Bible talks to all of those issues. God built a nation in Deuteronomy. Right. He said, here's 613 laws to run your nation by. And, you know, we look at America and say, well, you know, those laws work for any nation, 613. They deal with everything from immigration to military. The Bible, by the way, talks about things as specific as capital gains tax, as progressive taxation, as capitation taxation, estate taxation. Takes a position on all that, and we used to cover that from the pulpit. And that's what some of those old sermons show. And, man, we won't touch those things today. We're just going to get people saved. No, we used to believe that the Great Commission told us to make disciples of all men, to teach them everything I've taught you. So we covered all of that. And so, you know, from that standpoint, where we are today, the pastor can turn it around in a heartbeat. There is nothing illegal about preaching on any political topic you want to. And the proof of that is I've been involved in 7 cases of the U.S. Supreme Court, and I work with a number of legal groups. And starting about 7 years ago, Alliance Defending Freedom got together and said, you know, pastors are being told they can't talk about political things because of the IRS code. First off, the IRS does not grant tax exemptions. All you get is a letter of recognition. The Constitution is what makes a church nonprofit, not the IRS. So the IRS recognizes that you're a nonprofit. It does not make you a nonprofit. That's for churches. Now, for organizations like Wall Brothers, yes, we're an organization, not a church. But a church does not need an IRS letter of recognition. They're already nonprofit. Mm. So they can talk about anything they want. A union's nonprofit, and they talk about politics all the time. Well, a church is nonprofit. So what happened was we recognized there's 4 constitutional clauses that protect the pastor's right to say whatever he wants to from the pulpit, including talking about candidates. You got the right of free speech, you got the right of religion, you got the right to assemble yourself together on Sunday morning or Saturday night or whenever, talk about issues, and you have the right to petition government for redress of grievances. You have a right to stand up and criticize government and say, hey, what they're doing with Israel is wrong, what they're doing with whatever is wrong. So those are all constitutionally guaranteed rights. So first year, got 33 pastors, trained those 33 pastors, said, pastors, here's the biblical basis on all sorts of issues. Take something and cross the IRS line, and let's have the IRS come after you. And when they do, we've got this lawsuit waiting against the IRS. We'll crush them. So 33 pastors that year crossed the line. They talked about political things from the pulpit. They even called candidates by name and looked at their positions according to the Bible. We took all 33 of those, turned them into IRS, and said, IRS, these guys crossed the line. You got to come after them. IRS has 6 months to respond. 18 months later, they said, no, we don't think we're going to do that. So the next year, it was about 55 or 56 pastors we turned in. IRS didn't come after any. The next year, it was 87. IRS didn't come after any. The next year, it was 120. Last year, it was over 1,800 pastors that crossed the line and sent their sermon to the IRS. Now, why won't the IRS come after? Because the IRS would rather have 370,000 pastors believe that you can't talk about this than actually get into court and lose the case and have every pastor in America find out that they're free to talk about anything they want to. So there's all sorts of legal protection for pastors. They need to read those old sermons from history, get some boldness and courage, say, you know, this stuff. And by the way, I'm part of a group where we call between 500 and 600 churches every day, and we ask them a number of questions. And what we find right now is that nearly 90% of Bible-believing pastors say the Bible does talk about abortion and marriage and does talk about transgender and it does talk about gender identity and it does talk about taxes, but I'm not going to talk about any of those things the Bible talks about. You go, wait a minute. Did I hear you? 90% of pastors say, we believe the Bible talks about these issues, but we refuse to talk about them because we're not supposed to. You're kidding me. You can't talk about what the Bible talks about? And see, that's the mentality we have to get changed in America.
We really do. And so, David, thank you for this inspirational, convicting, and inspiring. I want to say it's a message. You didn't just give us statistics. You gave us a challenge. A challenge to be bold, to live out the scriptures and don't just talk about them. And on this Memorial Day, as we think about the sacrifices all the way back to that Revolutionary War, battle after battle, to help us and other countries maintain freedom, are we going to give it up just because we're getting lazy? I hope not. David Barton, thank you for your ministry, and keep it up. Man, we need your voice.
Thanks, brother. Thanks for all you do to educate others. We appreciate you. God bless.
You too.
This has been Beyond Words with Dr. William Campbell. And Beyond Words is a ministry of Scripture Awakening. Visit us on our website at scriptureawakening.com, where you can download free podcasts of all Beyond Words programs.